you got to make your career work for your personal life. And that's when I wrote Overcoming Burnout. It was kind of like a brick to the side of the head, is that a lot of people who get burned out have mistaken their priorities. Their personal life gets the scraps of their professional life, you know what I mean? Versus building a way to work that is going to support your personal goals and desires, so to speak.
Welcome to the Healthy Love and Money podcast. If you find money to be the number one, two, or even third largest source of stress in your relationship, then you're in the right place. Going beyond how to budget, invest, and do your taxes, we're going to explore financial intimacy. Discover how to talk with your partner about your shared financial life. Let's take the awkward and painful out of money conversations. Join me and hit follow to listen to weekly inspiring, healing, and motivating interviews with financial therapists, couples therapists, and financial planners, and so many more. Let's go on the journey of financial intimacy together. Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Healthy Love and Money podcast. Today, it's my distinct honor to welcome David Greenwood to the show. David is an author, mentor, podcast host, and passionate advocate for adults with ADHD and working through burnout. David, I'm so excited to have you on the show and to learn more about your work and how you're supporting adults with ADHD. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for the invite, Ed. I'm glad we finally connected. I know you and I went back and forth a little bit. It's not uncommon in this world, but we got it done, right?
We got it done. And, you know, listeners, I'm just going to let you in on a little backstory. David is so gracious already. He showed up on my calendar. We were supposed to meet today, and he logged into the meeting, and I saw his face, and I was like, "You're not the David I was expecting to see." And he looked at me, he's like, "I'm not?" So anyhow, I just like to show that backdrop because already that first impression is David's very warm, empathic, and understanding and patient. Like, we're busy, we're distracted, we're moving 100 miles an hour, and sometimes we miss really important details like who we're going to show up with. So I imagine this is something you deal with and see a lot in your work.
Yeah, it is. And there are a million reasons why somebody may be distracted, ADHD or not. But I think some of us with ADHD might just take that to another level. It bugs me because you hear some people say that, oh, everybody's a little ADHD. I'm like, nah, it's not quite that simple. But yeah, you know, I work with a lot of busy professionals, everybody from the C-suite to entrepreneurs to solopreneurs, people in higher ed, and they're all smarter than me. But the one thing that they are challenged with is just some of the more street smart day-to-day mechanics of managing their ADHD. So that's how I like to put it.
Wow, that's really powerful. And I do hear that phrase a lot. It's like, well, maybe we're all a little ADHD. But there really is a difference between having ADHD and just being distracted. Can you help us understand what that is and how we can better differentiate that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of different ways you could probably describe ADHD, but when I wrote my first book, Overcoming Distractions, I wanted to keep it simple without getting clinical, because my books aren't clinical. The way I work isn't clinical, but in essence, and again, I say it's more complicated than this, but if people want a very simple explanation, it's an unregulated amount of dopamine that flows into the prefrontal cortex. And if you know anything about the brain, you know that your prefrontal cortex is basically the CEO of you. So it's where your planning, your memory, your short-term memory, your task initiation, all those types of things, even emotions, reside. When you don't have a regulated amount of dopamine, then you begin to have challenges. You know, we all laugh at, why did I walk in this room? But a lot of us walk into a room and we have no idea why we're there. So, and again, it's just when I work with people, these are some of the challenges that we work with. seems to come out in the workplace, because these people are very busy. Maybe they're managing other people. And they just need to, quite frankly, figure out how to get out of their own way. And that's what I do.
Okay. Yeah. So let's kind of talk about that a little bit. What does it look like when someone starts to come to work with you, and what's kind of the, what's the journey that you see people go through as you work with them?
You know, it's interesting. Everything is, I would say, tailored. So there's a lot of programs out there for people with ADHD. People will walk people through a, you know, 8, 10, 12 week type of program, yeah. You know? Yeah. And it's interesting, a woman that I did a kind of a Zoom chat with a couple weeks ago, and she was listening to the podcast for a long time, and she goes, I just want to have a chat with you. And I said, yeah, sure. So we hopped on a Zoom chat. But her business is consulting, and she's, and so I asked her about her business, and she said, well, we meet our clients where they are. And I'm like, you know what? That really kind of describes how I operate, is I meet people where they are. So one hour I could be working with a small business owner. The next hour I could be working with a chief operating officer. Like I said, I've got people in higher ed and other types of industries, and they all just have specific challenges. They all have specific workloads on their plate. And we week by week try to kind of figure out how they can get it all done. I've worked with executives that themselves are on some type of performance improvement plan, because they just have so much on their plate and they can't seem to figure out how to navigate it. So we work through that every week to kind of help lower their stress, figure out how to schedule, how to put together a to-do list, quite frankly, what works for them. We work together so they can learn how to say no, because they're always taking on way too much. Those types of things. Work how to delegate to their team, all those issues. So I like to say I'm not an ADHD coach. I coach people with ADHD. And I think there's a difference as far as I'm concerned. Maybe somebody would say I'm full of it, but
yeah. Well, I mean, let's talk about that. And I think what part of what I'm hearing is that getting care with our mental health issues, concerns, is not a one size fits all program, right? Like, there's not a one standard 8 week go through these set of interventions and you're off and running. Each of us are different and have different needs, and that's part of the job of the professional, is to be able to kind of assess in a dynamic real time what's showing up, what do we need to have happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a lot of people who just share their screen with me, show me their to-do list. Maybe they're working on some type of electronic to-do list. They share their calendar, and we just try to kind of sort through the mountain of things that are on their plate. And, you know, one of the classic traits of somebody with ADHD in the workplace is they have this massive to-do list and they think they have to do it all now. And they just end up with decision fatigue to try and figure out, okay, what do I start out with Monday morning? That's very common. And then you can guess what happens, you know, nothing. So, so we try and figure that out. And, you know, for example, okay, what's this on your to-do list? It's XYZ project. When does it have to be done? I don't need to do it till next month. All right. So why is it right in your face right now? Why can't we put it somewhere, whether it's on your schedule or schedule it out 30 days or what have you? But I think a lot of people with ADHD, and I would say without ADHD, have a challenge like looking forward that far. So they've got half of it down. I got my to-do list. I got everything out of my head and on a piece of paper or in some type of digital platform like Asana or what have you. But they miss the planning part. So, and everything ends up being urgent when it's really not.
Well, that's right. That is part of that executive functioning, being able to plan and anticipate into the future, the near future and the distant future. I run into this with the financial planning side, right? Is how far into the future are they seeing themselves? And it's not very far a lot of times. And so part of the job is to stretch the imagination to like, what would it be like? What would you want to have happen in your retirement years? And that can be challenging. But there's definitely that more practical, like, oh, well, this project, when does it need to be due? Oh, 30 days from now. Okay, so let's just put it here. So that you're really helping them structure the information that's flowing through their mind that maybe they've gotten out into the organization app, Asana, or whatever task manager they've got. But it's helping them get more dreamlike.
Right. I mean, there's a key trait of ADHD is being time blind, a lot of people call it. But part of that is not having what they call a time horizon, not being able to plan out more than maybe a couple days. So, and that's that executive function piece. And sometimes people just need somebody by their side every week to kind of sort through this and help them. I hate the word accountability, but because it comes off as a pejorative sometimes, but just somebody to work with you each week to say, okay, you know, I have my notes. Hey, did you get this XYZ project done? Did you call this person? Did you do this? Did you, you know, and just keep things moving forward. Sometimes they just need that.
Well, I don't know. Put it another way, they're maybe borrowing your executive functioning, right?
What little I have.
Right. Yeah, no, that time blindness, you know, it's interesting. I just had someone reach out to me recently and they said, you know, I have ADHD, I have time blindness. It causes me to lose track of what I'm spending and what's happening there. And, you know, like help. Mm-hmm. I'm hearing kind of this overall big pattern. So you're focused on the implications in the workplace with folks with ADHD, but what about like, how does that then flow back into their own intimate relationships also? Thoughts or perspectives there?
Yeah, because if you can't manage your workload and manage your work commitments, then you're coming home late. You're working nights at home, you're working weekends, and that affects your home life. So being able to manage the projects and tasks and deadlines and everything else and get things started on time and schedule properly, understand how long something may take and scheduling that properly, then allows you to do a better job of simply getting home on time. And not having to, you know, eat dinner and then, you know, work somewhere in your house while your kids want your time. I have met with a lot of people that in other countries that it may be nighttime over there because I have clients all over the world and it's nighttime and they're still in their office. So that's one of our goals is to figure out how to. You got to make your career work for your personal life. And that's when I wrote Overcoming Burnout. It was kind of like a brick to the side of the head is that a lot of people who get burned out have mistaken their priorities. Their personal life gets the scraps of their professional life. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Versus building a way to work that is going to support your personal goals and desires, so to speak.
Welcome to 2024, and thank you for listening to the Healthy Love and Money podcast. I'd like to take you behind the scenes of therapy-informed financial planning, where we talk about emotions, we talk about retirement plans, we talk about painful family experiences with money, and so much more. There's no need to hide things that leave you feeling embarrassed or ashamed about your financial situation. This year, we watch couples and individuals work through financial anxiety and start talking lovingly about money. We saw couples and individuals take action towards their goals, like closing a business that no longer fit them, paying off debt that felt crushing, increasing their comfort with their realized wealth, and ultimately overcoming some of those financial secrets that had been plaguing the relationship. Ultimately, the best part was seeing smiles return to our clients' faces about life, relationships, and money. This is why we do therapy-informed financial planning. I invite you to make 2024 the year you start therapy-informed financial planning. Check the show notes below to schedule your free 30-minute consultation. definitely. I think that, I mean, that dovetails obviously really nicely with financial planning as well, as, you know, trying to help people get a grasp on where am I now financially? Where am I trying to go? How much do I actually need to work? How much do I actually need to make? Mm. And why am I making this money? And most people will say it's not because I just have a lot of fun making money. It's because they want to spend time with their family. They want to go on vacations. They want to create memories, so on and so forth. Yet they're so stuck in this hamster wheel of working that they just really need help finding their way out.
Yeah. You know, I mean, one common example is not locking down the times where you need to get your work done. And then your door is always open and your employees are coming in, and, you know, then it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon and you've done nothing, versus putting up a bit of a boundary. So I work with a lot of people on this. It's just, you know what, from X, you know, X o'clock to X o'clock,
right?
I got to get my own work done, and then I'm free after that. So, and a lot of people don't do that because they, for some reason, feel like they have to be available all the time. But that just absolutely destroys your week.
It leaves you very unproductive, for sure. I mean, I know I've seen that with myself, and I have to continually revisit and reset the boundaries and just really focus on, I got to do this project first before I get into my inbox, before I take on a call, so on and so forth. And that calendaring skill is really valuable, and holding to it. Yeah. And I think, you know, I often talk with some of my clients about, you know, some of the stuff is a lot like dieting and budget, you know, dieting. Like, I mean, if you just set it, but you don't hold it, it's not really worth much. And so we got to figure out what's going to help you keep the diet, what's going to help you keep the boundaries for setting the time. And there's that people pleasing side of things. So how do you help people get comfortable with saying no to meeting interruptions and closing the door?
You know, it's everything from testing the no to just finally having a little bit of self-awareness about it. And it seems like an exercise in, I've never done that before, or I've never blocked out time. Right. You know, maybe they blocked out time for something, but they didn't block out time to get their own work done. And then they just invite interruptions. And people with ADHD do not like interruptions. We have a super hard time getting started again.
Right. So can you walk listeners through, like, trying the no or testing the no? What does that look like when you're coaching someone through testing the no? What does that sound like, look like, feel like?
We usually talk about just starting small. So, you know, just maybe, so for example, maybe there's boundaries that need to be set with the leaders above them, and they're getting driven into the ground, so to speak, with all these requests and demands of their time and everything else. So, you know, for example, do I really need to be in this meeting? You know, maybe not. So, and then continue to try and up the ante by being a little diplomatic. I think when you push back a little bit, you finally realize that it wasn't as bad as you thought it was. The other thing is, like I just mentioned, where you've got maybe somebody in leadership that I'm working with, we make sure that we guard their time to be able to get things done. So maybe you have somebody in leadership in a small to medium sized organization that may be doing everything from business development to HR to, you know, serving larger clients, that type of thing. But they need to get their work done too. So I think, you know, we used to have a phrase, you know, in our open door policy. It just doesn't work. You know, it just doesn't work. Sometimes you gotta shut your door. So, and people need to get comfortable with that. You need to get comfortable with it. Your team needs to get comfortable with it. Look, there's 3 hours a day I can't talk to him, but he's available after that. There was a phrase that in Overcoming Burnout, somebody said, and I forget who it was, but she said that you train people how to treat you. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. We do train people how to treat us. And then sorry, my brain just went 23 different directions. So I'm going to just bring my brain back to being here. Hello, brain.
That happens. This is real life, people.
This is real life. This is not a stage act. This is real. This is happening live. You're listening to record it, but it's live. We get these cultural kind of imperatives of like open door policy, which leaves us vulnerable to feeling like, well, we got to leave the door open all the time. And yet, yeah. Like the spirit of that and the reality of that are very different. And there's so many of those little phrases. I think one of the ones that has come up is around servant leadership. Mm-hmm. And in the way that gets construed in a lot of people's minds is like, well, I got to take care of everybody else. Well, you take someone that's already used to taking care of everybody and doing everything, and then you say, well, you got to be a servant leader. It just doubles down on that. Mm-hmm. Instead of saying like, well, part of being a servant leader is also taking care of your own work and setting boundaries. So, you know, I think one of the things I'm working with for myself and with many of my clients is like, we can challenge some of these teachings or get a little more nuance around them. Do you find that that's true for you too? Is you have to really help people kind of sort through what these business teachings actually mean and how they work?
Yeah, because I think I wouldn't say become set in their ways, but they have a particular way of conducting themselves. I think you really learn a lot about why people burn out because they are giving too much of themselves. And you can create in a number of scenarios regarding that. You have an open door policy. So you just let your employees interrupt you all day long. You are a caregiver, for example, and you're giving of yourself all day long, whether it's an aging parent, maybe you have a child with a disability, something like that. Those things you can't walk away from, obviously, but you need to figure out how to make it work. So it's funny because I equate some of our ADHD behaviors as adults to our schooling, where at least the boys, some of the boys, we got bad grades, we got bad report card after bad report card. We brought those home. Our parents were mad at us. Okay. And so we slowly become people pleasers, as you mentioned, and that comes out in any number of ways. We don't want people mad at us. We want to make people happy. And the result is we start to get tired. We don't get our work done. When we do sit down and get our work done, our brain has just had enough for the day. So that's why we need to kind of figure out what kind of systems and, as I say, what type of mechanics we need to put in place to, I'm not a therapist. I mean, I work on the mechanical part of helping people piece together a week that's going to flow, you know?
Well, I appreciate you naming that. Is you're not necessarily trying to change the client's psychological processes. It's more like we're trying to work with how your mind is working and then put structures in place that will help you get down the road in the way that you need to. Right. Whereas a therapist may be actually trying to help shift some of those thought patterns, the speed at which you're processing information, maybe even to become more self-reflective and really kind of slow that down. But for you, that's not really the goal. It's more like on the functional side, how do we time block? How do we just say no to taking more meetings on? If I'm understanding you correctly.
Yeah. And, you know, I've been an executive. I ran a full PR firm for 20 years. So I was an entrepreneur. So I know what it's like to run a business, to grow a business, to manage people. And I know what it's like to do that, having an ADD brain. So that's where my experience comes from. Don't get me wrong. There are coaching sessions. I like to say coaching mentoring because of my background, but there are times where I spend an hour on a Zoom call with a client and they just need to vent. They just had a bad week. So I'm not providing therapy. So, but they just need to talk to somebody that understands what they're going through. But I think there's some value in that because you can unpack a bad week and figure out what went wrong, you know?
I love the profession of therapy, and I think it's done an unintended consequence, right? Is the original therapy is human relationships. Humans need other humans to process their experiences with. Mm-hmm. And that has therapeutic value.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think helping humans, whether you're a licensed therapist or not, still have tremendous therapeutic value. The willing that you're willing to show up, listen, you have perspective, but you don't just jump, you know, you use that perspective wisely and thoughtfully, has tremendous value. Because there's often, especially for many, many leaders, there's no one that's really listening to them. There's no one where they can really let their whole guard down because they're trying to manage and keep everyone happy and moving down the road. And yet they have their own complex feelings and mixed emotions and mixed thoughts about what needs to happen. And they just need a safe place to land to work through some of that stuff.
No, and I think you bring up a good point. You can belong to a business networking group. You can belong to a mastermind of, you know, executives or busy professionals. But it's hard to, if you are in the C-suite, for example, and you have ADHD, it's really hard to put that on the table in these groups, you know, because I think a lot of people might not relate to what you're struggling with. So they don't have a full understanding of ADHD. They don't understand why we do certain things and why we have trouble getting started on projects and all these things and the brick walls that we need to smash through. And that's why working with somebody you trust on a one-on-one basis is very valuable. You know, I tell people when we start, I go, look, I keep it simple. We get right to work. But after a couple months, if you decide we're not a good fit, I'll go find somebody for you. Because I know plenty of other people. If we're not a good fit, I'll find somebody that is a good fit. Because I might not be the best person to help that struggling adult.
Yeah. Well, I think that takes such humility, right? Is that we're not the right fit for every person that we end up meeting or coming in contact with for the people that, right? It's a wonderful thing. But also for people that are listening to this is to have the confidence to say, like, this person that I'm working with is not working. Maybe it's time to try someone new. And, you know, and sometimes the person you've been working with for a while, you've gotten the most you can out of that relationship professionally. And it's time to try working with someone that will offer something else that'll help you continue to grow and evolve and adapt. And that's what's so valuable is it's, I think for all of us, we need to be grown up and mentored in adulthood by lots of different adults, not just a single therapist or a single coach or a single pastor or a single, we need think of art, like a, you know, the painting palette, right? Like each adult can bring slightly different colors to our world. And if, when we get all the colors, man, it's a lot more fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, it sounds like this work comes out of some of your own lived experience, David. And, you know, having to sort through and figure this out for yourself. Is that fair to say?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was a train wreck as a kid. Let's start there. I barely scratched myself out of welding school to begin with, but I kind of fell into entrepreneurship shortly after that. I owned a restaurant, which was actually, believe it or not, a pretty good fit for my brain. Because once you got kind of swirling in a busy restaurant, you really got in the zone. So you might think, oh my God, running a restaurant would be a death sentence for somebody with ADD, but it actually was the complete opposite. I didn't want to do that anymore. So I ended up managing public relations for Special Olympics, and then ended up being the vice president of Special Olympics, responsible for a big fundraising budget. But I wanted to do PR. I got kind of promoted into I don't think I was bad at fundraising, but I wanted to get back to public relations. So I opened up my own PR firm. But then that changed, as many people know, where, you know, Facebook and all these other things were coming into the landscape, and it was changing the industry fundamentally, and I didn't like it. So, and I think that's, you talk about lessons from experience. I mean, that was something I tried to pivot for years to make a business model work, taking into consideration my values. I was the guy, because, and this isn't bragging by any means, so don't take it that way, but I had if people listening remember what a Rolodex is, I had a pretty good Rolodex of TV reporters and producers and everything else from my Special Olympics days. So when I went out on my own, I could get CEO clients and I could put them on TV with relative ease because I had built those relationships over the years. Right. And then PR started turning into social media and I didn't like it. I didn't want to do that. So I wrote 2 books and here I am. So I still, in full disclosure, have a couple marketing clients that I work with and I've been working with for a very long time, but a good chunk of my days are spent helping others.
Well, I think that's to me, what I appreciate is, you know, just hearing even thumbnail sketches from welder to restaurateur to Special Olympics and growing up, there's that diverse experience also really colors in perspective as you work with other adults who are also likely in that sometimes having to come to the conclusion, like, this doesn't fit for me anymore.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's time to make a transition. And those transitions can be really challenging, but having another adult help you move through that transition can be really helpful.
Yeah. Sometimes they need it. Yeah. You're exactly right. People with ADHD get some of them, not all of them. I wouldn't cast a broad brush, but many people with ADHD just get bored of what they're doing and the challenge is over. So they have to find a new career. So it's not uncommon.
You know, we started this, I don't think I said this before we hit record, and you know, in having more conversations with folks that look through the lens of ADHD, it's like, you know, I might need to go back and look at this. And just in light of this conversation is go back and look at this lens. And I think, you know, this is for me, the ongoing quest is like, how do I understand myself when there's, you know, through the lens of ADHD for me, I've looked through the lens of childhood trauma and attachment injuries. And that's become a kind of a primary way that I understand why my brain is working the way that it is. Mm-hmm. But that kind of distractibility kind of wanting to change and keep things fresh is something that feels very resonant. So
yeah,
David, I'm sure that there's so much more. We've only scratched the surface on all the things that we could talk about,
but sure. Yeah. You know,
bring this conversation to a close for today. What's one parting piece of guidance, wisdom, or hope that you would want to offer listeners?
I think there's 2 words that should guide any busy adult with ADHD. One is always seek clarity. We have trouble seeking clarity. So clarity in your life overall, where you want to take your career at a given time, as we've just discussed, sometimes that changes. Clarity in the even down to the projects you are trying to work on in your job or your position, because a lot of us, we miss some of the particulars. And then that leads to procrastination, which is a huge problem for people with ADHD. So if you don't know the answers, go get them. For example, you met with a client, you get back to the office, you're unclear what needs to be done. Some of us feel guilty about going back and asking follow-up questions. You got to get better at that. So clarity is a big, big barrier to thriving with ADHD, or lack of clarity. The second is, you have to be in control. You have to take charge. You have to do the work. You have to, as we mentioned, those little things like blocking your time or telling people you're not available, or getting out and exercising or taking walks or doing the things that you need to do. You can't let ADHD run you. You have to be in control of it. And that is a process of trial and error to figure out what works. What's your morning routine? You know, are you running around every morning? And is every morning a disaster? Those types of things, you have to be in control. And that takes a long time to figure that stuff out for some people. So clarity and control, it needs to be part of your entire life.
That's wonderful. David, thank you so much for your time and generosity of experience. If people want to connect with you and your work, where's the best way for them to do that?
It's overcomingdistractions.com. They can find my books there. They can find a link to the podcast. There's probably I think we're up to about 250 episodes. It's actionable advice. So we don't just sit there and yap. We actually, like your podcast here, we give people some things to think about, you know? So, yeah.
That's great. Well, we'll definitely have the show notes available too. So if you didn't catch it, there'll be links. Just check the show notes and you'll be able to connect up with David. Yeah, I appreciate your time today, and I wish you the best.
Yeah, and I'm glad we connected.
Thanks. Take care.
Take care.
I invite you now to stop for 5 or 10 minutes and reflect on what you just heard. Maybe even journal about it. Give yourself the time to consider what you just heard and what it means to you. By giving yourself the time to reflect and integrate what you just heard, it will help you along your journey of learning, healing, and growing towards financial intimacy in your life. Please like and follow this podcast and share with someone that would benefit from being on the journey of financial intimacy. Wishing you healthy love and money, Ed.